All right, so I am Stephanie Hoff interviewing Kenneth Smith about Ken Smith, and this is for the 50th anniversary of the Tao movement, protest, and so I'm here to ask you about what you remember and to share your story. So here you are.
Okay, most of the day is pretty well etched in my memory, although of course we know from science that you can sort of magnify things over time in your memory. Well, I was 19 then, but I was a freshman. I had come straight from high school. I grew up in Honolulu. And the residential area in Honolulu where I lived called Kailua, we had a Marine base there. And the Marines used to march right up our street to go up in the mountains to train. And then in 1965, when Johnson set the Marines to defend the air base at Da Nang, these were kids that had been based right in our town. And we knew them, and there were funerals in town right away. So being in Hawaii, one was automatically much more aware of the Vietnam War than citizens in the rest of the United States were, because it was easier to ignore everywhere else, and people didn't know the details. Also in 1965, President Johnson closed down the American school in Saigon because it was too dangerous to run an American high school in Saigon anymore. And we got 25 or 30 kids from Saigon came to our school in Honolulu, because the school I went to was a private school called Punahou, which was an elite school. And so these kids were children of the elites in Saigon from the American contingent there. So General Westmoreland's daughter and 25 or 30 other kids from Saigon suddenly came to our high school. And it was real interesting because they had learned Vietnamese, which their parents never learned, and they had Vietnamese friends. And I remember them telling us, hey, this isn't gonna work, that this is Vietnam's coming of age as a country, and we can't help. We can't do anything but harm. And I had all these perspectives, which were really pretty far in advance of even almost all of the other students at the UW-Madison that fall, except I never thought it was something I needed to do anything about personally. I would just try to stay away from it. Part of my motivation for even coming to college at that point was to stay away from it, although I was destined to come here anyway. So that morning I had a 950 or something exam in one of the classes I was taking in the social science building across the street. But I thought I would go up a little early. It was my first college 6 weeks exam, you know. I thought I would go up a little early and check out this demonstration, which I was aware of. I agreed with the goals of the demonstrators, but at that point I had this bemused thinking cap on where I was just going to watch what people did and not participate. I just wanted to observe. And I always had thought it was kind of dumb to go and sit in somewhere in order to be intentionally arrested. Because it just didn't seem like, not that I was opposed to the goals, it just seemed like a dumb way to go about it. So anyway, I was standing, and some of the photos reveal this spot I noticed where I was standing. There was a little marble sort of a planter box or something right outside the entrance to what's now called Ingram, which was then called Commerce. And I was standing on that little marble box, so I'm about 18 inches higher than the grade of the entrance sidewalk that leads right into the building. And so I was standing there when the police tromped in there, and I heard the screaming and the yelling, and I knew something was pretty bad. And then they started bringing people out, and scalp wounds bleed pretty profusely, so I saw a lot of blood right away. And I'm going, what the hell is this? You know, because the police weren't arresting people for sitting in. They were just beating the shit out of them. And they brought a guy out who was wrestling with them, trying to get away. He was bleeding from the head, and they couldn't hold him up, but he dropped to the pavement right below me. And four or five officers had their clubs out, and they were all systematically clubbing him. right below me, inches from me. And at that moment, my life was transformed because I went from passive to active in a flash. And I leapt onto those police officers. And I'm big enough, I knocked them down. You know, I couldn't stand for this anymore. And then they turned on me, and I fled into the crowd, got away. And I stayed up there most of the rest of the morning and didn't ever go to my exam. I remember a strange thing from that day. I was heading back down off of Bascom Hill, maybe around noon or later after the whole thing had sort of come to its stupid end. And I ran into a fellow I knew from Kenya who was in my dorm. And his name was, I remember his name, Jafet Nkonge. He was a member of the Meru tribe from Kenya. And I said, Jafet, come here. You have to come and see this. Because suddenly my consciousness was so expanded by what I had seen. I saw that this was something that he needed to know about the United States, that there were people who weren't into the imperialism thing, that people were fighting it. And he was afraid to go because he didn't want to get in trouble because he's here on a student visa and he would be sent home and so on, and he was very reluctant. And I was trying to say, we're not all laying down for this. I was already transformed. I'd already turned into the person I would be for the next 10 years, which was, and I use the word all the time, a complete revolutionary. And I wrote a letter to a friend that night, and I remember what I said. I said, I've come to realize that this whole thing, this whole society, the way it works, the way the money's organized, the way the power's organized, everything is completely corrupt and causes war and causes suffering, and it needs to be totally overturned. And I wasn't talking just about ending the Johnson administration or anything like that. We had to start living an entirely different way, I felt. And I had no such thoughts the day before. A lot of my friends were there. I mean, people who I later became friends with were among the sit-ins. You know, the fellow who tore the flag off Bascom Hall is still a friend of mine. I spent a lot of time with them in the intervening years. What happened to me was, after that, college was pretty much of a second ranking priority in my life compared to raising hell. I joined something called the Wisconsin Draft Resistance Union, which the very joining of was a federal crime. We signed a document, which I still have a worn out copy of, that said, we encourage others to resist the draft. Because we felt like if people refused to go, they couldn't hold the war anymore. That was a way to get at the underbelly of the war, was that they needed people. And all the next year, whenever somebody from the Wisconsin Draft Resistance Union was being drafted or being called to be drafted, we would go to Milwaukee and hold a demonstration outside the building in their support. Sometimes they refused induction, which led to criminal charges and so on. And this awareness made me really, really, really feel hypocritical about going to college. Just to stay out of the war. And I had a falling out with my parents. I told them, you know, what I had become, who I was. And they said, well, we're not going to support you going to college anymore. And I said, fine. I didn't care. I was home in Hawaii that summer in August of 68 when the Chicago conventions were held. And I tried to come back to school the next fall. But that fall, there was the election, and Richard Nixon was elected president, and I knew he was going to be worse than Johnson. And at that moment, I decided to drop out of college, and I stayed out for 6 years. And during that entire time, I did not have a real home. And I traveled around the country. I went to demonstrations all over the country, in New York, in San Francisco, in Oakland, even in Hawaii. I had my own induction in Hawaii, which I failed most of the tests. And then when they wanted to induct me, I just became unfindable. I didn't tell my parents where I lived because I felt like the FBI might come to their house and ask them, and I didn't want them to have to decide whether to tell them where I was. So if they didn't know, they couldn't tell them. So I didn't let my parents know where I was. And they did come, my parents later told me, looking for me, and they honestly said they didn't know where I was. And I lived for most of the next 5 years as just a total rebel. And this is lifestyle, politics, everything. I was arrested a number of times in demonstrations. I had the shit beaten out of me. After a while, I became sort of more cautious about getting beat up and arrested, but I never really stopped. And when Saigon fell, I had tried to drop back in, and I had returned to Madison, and I had re-entered the university after 6 years away. But I took part in the spontaneous demonstration that went up State Street the night that Saigon fell. And there's a picture of me standing behind Paul Soglin in the city council room, holding one end of a banner that had Carl Armstrong and Ho Chi Minh on it. And we were happy. Because I came around to the feeling that the Vietnamese had a right to have their country, and I wanted them to win. We ran around chanting, "Ho ho Ho Chi Minh, NFL is gonna, NLF is gonna win," not NFL. And we meant it, and they did. And I'm not sorry. I'm sorry for the big hole it blew in my life. I'm sorry I didn't do more to stop the war sooner. We felt like there should be no peace at home until there's peace in Vietnam. And that was a sort of a terribly hard line, because we couldn't really rest or accept anything. You know, it's amazing. I didn't even get thin. I hardly ever worked, but I didn't starve. There's so much excess in this country. I just ate off the excess, basically. Not all my friends survived that period. I'm glad I did. I re-entered society. I got my degree. I found my wife. I started a life. I found a job I liked. I was a reporter. Raised my kids. My kids, bless their hearts, marched against the Iraq War. I was too heartsick to do so at that point. I went up to the demonstrations that happened on the square during the early days of the Walker administration. I felt like those people didn't know how to hold a demonstration. The police were bringing the legislators into this secret entrance over on Main Street, and they were just letting them go by. They said, I said to these people around me, I said, "You just block the entrance. We'll get arrested." I said, "The hell, you're here to block the entrance." Nobody did it. And maybe that's a little crazy. I don't know. But now I'm heartsick because our country is really in deep trouble with the administration it currently has. I think the vestige of democracy that this country ever had is in even more trouble now than it was then, and it was big trouble then. And I don't know what to do. I don't know what I can personally do, and I don't even know what a hot-blooded young 19-year-old could do today to stop what's going on. And I'm just sick about it. I gotta stop.
Thank you for sharing.
You wanna ask a question?
Yeah, I would. You said that before the Dow demonstration, you had a lot of different opinions, and you just kind of wanted to observe. You didn't want to be in it.
It's the difference between passive and active. It's the difference between reading the newspaper and being in the newspaper. Because I was in the newspaper. I remember the day I was arrested in Madison, and it was actually a family gathering at my relative's home on the east side of Madison. And they were all looking at the paper, and I walked in, and there was my name right on the front page of the papers, having been arrested that day. This is a different day than Dow. It's knowing something is wrong, knowing something is messed up, but no longer being willing to accept it. And I guess in a sense it took the blood to make me feel that way. And I've said about the current situation when Trump was elected, I said there will be blood, and there has been. And I don't know how much more blood will need to be shed to if this country can even be fixed. I mean, it's terribly sad to me. This anniversary has actually no real joy. I can't say we won. As we won some points for a while, but we didn't win. We don't have a better country now. We're not a peace-faring country like we could be. We're still an imperialist warmongering country. It makes me sick. And I swear to God, I still think I'm a patriot to feel that way.
Do you think that if you didn't change from passive to active that one moment, do you think you would have changed later?
It's hard to know, because I was really interested in going to college. I mean, after I got here, I wasn't too interested that summer, because I just didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. The trouble with being 19 is you have so many options that taking one path requires not taking so many other paths. It's hard to decide. Possibly, probably, it would have turned out the same in terms of who I became. You know, there were other colleges that actually recruited me to go. You know, I could have gone to Stanford. A lot of my friends went to Stanford. But there were demonstrations at Stanford, too. But somehow I think that moment accelerated my radicalization to the point. I mean, a lot of people didn't overcommit as much as I did. They didn't give up their whole lives. They didn't go completely underground. They didn't put their body and their soul on the line like I did. Maybe it wouldn't have been as severe for me, but I'm not sorry. I wish I had done more.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before we conclude?
Probably not without repeating myself.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing. This was October 18th, 2017, the 50th anniversary of the Tao demonstration. Thank you again.